This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The tragic case of a young Aboriginal girl who suffered horrific abuse and neglect for 18 months at the hands of unfit caregivers points to significant improvements that are required to British Columbia's child protection system, as well as to the protocol that guides the interprovincial transfer of such vulnerable children across Canada. In a special report called Out of Sight, How One Aboriginal Child's Best Interests Were Lost Between Two Provinces, British Columbia's representative for children and youth, Mary Ellen Turple-Lafond, examines the circumstances that led to the move of the toddler from BC to Saskatchewan and concludes that no less than three child welfare bodies failed on some level to protect the best interests of the child.
I spoke with Mary Ellen Turple-Lafond earlier this week, and I began by asking her where this case came from and how it ended up being analyzed in such great detail.
Well, this was a case of a girl, an infant, really, that was extremely vulnerable. Her mom, who is a First Nations person from Saskatchewan, was living in Vancouver. She was in her 20s and was really coming through a pretty horrific family situation herself. She was involved in survival sex work and an IV drug user, and she got pregnant, had a baby, and she was really clear to her she wasn't going to be able to raise the child. Her life was just in a bad place. So she put the child into the care of child welfare officials in BC. They made contact with the home band, which was in Saskatchewan, and they made the inquiry about whether there was any suitable family member that might be able to take the little girl. A grandfather stepped forward, and the child welfare agency there vouched for the grandfather, and the BC child welfare officials transferred the little girl to the grandfather. What they neglected to tell the BC officials was the grandfather had a very significant criminal record in a child welfare history. The little girl went to live with the grandpa on reserve in Saskatchewan and endured 18 months of horrific abuse. The grandparents, the grandfather, and the step-grandmother were prosecuted for failing to provide the necessities of life to the child because she was starved and maltreated and physically abused and locked in the basement. They were sentenced to 3 years in jail. And my office, which is independent and looks at the treatment of children, took a look at the case to figure out how would it be the child would be transferred to that grandfather. And that is the background to this report, where we looked at the actions of child welfare officials and how they decided what was in the best interest of this child.
Now, your report makes four key recommendations. The first focuses on British Columbia's standards for out-of-province placements for children. Tell us about that recommendation.
Well, because I'm the representative for children and youth for British Columbia, I really can only make my recommendations to British Columbia. Although I think the recommendations are pertinent probably to every jurisdiction, and that is right now there is what's called an interprovincial protocol for when children are transferred out of province. That wasn't followed for this girl, and that protocol is quite out of date. It is not necessarily understood or followed by the Aboriginal or First Nations child welfare agencies, and it's clear that we need to strengthen this because at this point, most jurisdictions in Canada cannot tell us how many children are transferring in and out. And my experience in British Columbia is that frequently these are very vulnerable children, First Nations children, and we don't have any solid national practices to make sure that they're safe. So in this case, the little girl went with grandpa, was not safe, but also she received no medical follow-up, no supports, early childhood or other supports in Saskatchewan, despite the fact that in BC it was identified that she had medical and a few other needs. So I'm very concerned and have recommended that we strengthen this, and I think other jurisdictions should pay careful attention to those recommendations.
Your recommendation about this has to do with a commitment, as it's described, across Canada about placement decisions. What would that commitment look like?
Well, I really think we need to improve our practices in child welfare across Canada. I appreciate these tend to be within the authority of provincial governments, but the fact is that families and children are moving around a lot. And when it comes to First Nations children, especially on reserve, you know, there's the federal dimension as well. So one of the things I highlighted in the report was in the U.S., there's an Indian Child Welfare Act that's been around for 35 years to support tribes to make sure they know where the children are going, they're properly notified, that they can improve child welfare practice and safety. I think we need to have a greater leadership and investment in this area for First Nations children. As well, I think that provincial directors of child welfare need to sit together and really think about the needs of these most vulnerable children and improve their practice. So we need to come to some national standards of practice, and I have to encourage everyone to get on that task because it hasn't been overlooked in this country for many, many years.
When you say standards of practice, are you talking about the recommendations that refer to social work practice, record-keeping deficiencies? Tell us more about that.
I think it applies to everything, but most importantly, it's the best interest of the child. Making sure that where the child is living, that it's a safe place, that they're supported, that they're getting the early childhood support, depending on their age, their infant development support, particularly if they've been born in a tough spot, like this child was, to a mom that is an IV drug user. The child's going to be vulnerable right at birth and is going to need extra medical support. But in child welfare practice, for sure, things like proper home studies, follow-up, making sure the child's connected to the services they have, these basic issues, being able to do a criminal record check appropriately in each province. This grandpa had 70 criminal convictions, and the social workers were not able to track that and assess that appropriately. And that's a pretty staggering oversight when they're required to do that. So we need some national understanding around what those are. So I would like to see some of those practices improved.
In terms of the federal government, you've commented on the federal government, provincial governments. You urge the federal government to consider a more active role in the well-being of Aboriginal children under provincial or territorial care. What are the roadblocks in the way of that happening?
Well, we have this very peculiar situation in Canada where under the Federal Indian Act, the provincial child welfare legislation applies on reserve. So First Nations children, you know, the Indian Act, which everybody sees is pretty obsolete, it still allows for these provincial child welfare authorities to work on reserve. So what has happened in many provinces is they've created Aboriginal or delegated Indian child welfare services. The difficulty is they're delegated to provide the service, but are they able to provide the service and are they doing it to a high standard and are they receiving the funding and the support that they need? No one seems to be able to have a very solid answer to that question. The federal government spends, I believe, about $800 million a year on First Nations child welfare. The outcomes are so poor, as this report suggests, you know, we can't really afford to have another generation of children live through this. The federal government needs to develop a much more sensible policy, and the provinces should have a strong interest, but hopefully also the First Nations leadership will have a strong interest. So I sent the report to the Federal Minister of Aboriginal Affairs. I've also sent the report to the National Chief, and I've suggested that we need to work much, much harder if we're going to put children at the center of concern.
Your report was issued while at least two additional investigations were underway into the mistreatment of children and the failure of systems to protect them. An Ontario coroner's inquest into the death of Jeffrey Baldwin 11 years ago and a British inquiry into the death of Daniel Pelka. Both children were starved and abused, but as was observed particularly in the Daniel Pelka case, the child and his suffering seemed to be invisible to authorities. Can you comment generally about the way abuses of children seem to escape the attention or adequate response of adults around them?
Well, it's really very interesting in this area because this little girl's treatment, I mean, there were many other children living in the home. There were people coming in and out of the home. And over the 18-month period that she was abused, people did phone the child welfare authorities and say, I think something's happening here that you need to look into. But the capacity of those child welfare authorities to actually respond and see the child, this seems to be almost like a universal thread of concern. Whether it's, you know, a little boy placed with the grandparents in the Ontario case and starved, whether it's this case, and I can't speak about the case in the UK, but there is this issue, which is you have to see the child, you have to have a strong functioning child welfare system, but you also need to have friends, neighbors, keep a watchful eye on children, And they need to feel confident that when they call, when they feel there's an abuse or neglect situation, that someone responds and sees the child. This little girl suffered for 18 months. When she left BC, she was a healthy weight, about 27 pounds, which is normal for about a two-year-old. 18 months later, at 3.5 years old, she weighed less than when she left BC. She had a broken shoulder. She had bruises and there was damage and injury to her head. And, of course, the impact of the abuse has been very traumatic. But that might have been spared if when that first person phoned child welfare and said something's happening with this little girl, someone would have shown up and intervened. And that's why we do these reports. It's from a perspective of prevention. But I feel there has to be a lot more accountability in the child welfare system for the work that's done, much more transparency, because we need to work in the best interest of children.
Mary Ellen, is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation?
Well, I would just like to point out to your listeners that the little girl that was the subject of the report is 8 years old. She's in a solid placement now in a foster home, and she appears to be showing resilience. It was a concern to me, though, despite the responsibility possibly of these child welfare authorities for her unsafe situation. You know, the injury to her wasn't really investigated in terms of the harm, and so, you know, I recommended that the public trustee in Saskatchewan look at the fact that this child was injured in care and consider whether there should be some civil remedies to her. So it's important that we start to treat children as children. These are not possessions passed around. These are social agents and humans with their own rights. And they may be younger than adults and not the age of majority, but I really feel like we need to wrap them in appropriate protection and support so that maybe people will take much more seriously how they treat them.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Kevin.
Mary Ellen Turple-Lafond was appointed British Columbia's first representative for children and youth in November 2006. Turple-Lafond is on leave from the Saskatchewan Provincial Court, where she was the administrative judge for Saskatoon. You can find out more about the work and reports of the representative for children and youth online at rcybc.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.